This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. 100 Years of Reimagining Flight is the title of a new book that looks back on a century of GE Aviation. The company was integral in launching a biplane in Dayton back in 1919, and it's played a significant role in the local economy with its large plant in what we now know as Evendale. What it makes there helps planes get all in the air all over the world. And joining Cincinnati Edition today is the author of 100 Years of Reimagining Flight and the former media relations director at GE Aviation, Rick Kennedy. Welcome, Rick.
Hey, thanks, Michael.
So glad you could be here. Rick, your book takes us year by year through the history of General Electric and its aviation operation. And before we dive into what you wrote exactly, talk about the process that you undertook in gathering your information and crafting the story the way that you did.
Well, the scary part is I lived a third of that history myself as the PR flack.
Yeah, you were there for 30 years.
So I started assembling a timeline with a coworker, Jim Stump, many years ago, because people would ask, when did things happen? When did we launch the CF-6 on the DC-10 or whatever it was? So I began putting together a year-to-year timeline of my own, just on filling my own needs in the job and media relations and supporting that job. And so, and then I began to realize that so many new people coming in the company could not connect the dots between how we went from being this maker of firecracker hot, you know, Mach 2 fighter jets in the 50s, and now we're doing the giant GE90 engine for the 777. And they just weren't connecting the dots. And I thought, well, if you do a broader narrative, that won't really help. So I thought doing it year to year, like I started with the original timeline, and then from there I began doing the research. And of course, you have so many more tools available to you today, newspapers.com, for example, so I could get the atmosphere in the local community when things occurred. And also all the trade magazines, all of their editions going all the way back to World War I are all available. So I had some great access. And of course, GE has kept a pretty good record of its advances in engines and technology. And there's a lot of folks alive in this town who changed the way we fly, and they modestly live all over the city, and we don't know about them. So I was able to highlight them as well.
Yeah, that was a really cool feature of the book. I mean, to learn the impact that this area and other parts of Ohio have had on aviation through GE's production. And as we said, you worked there for 30 years. Prior to that, you spent a decade as one of us. You were a journalist.
I was a journalist, and I came to Cincinnati to work for the Cincinnati Post.
The Cincinnati Post.
In the mid-80s, and I covered GE. Yeah, God rest its soul, and I covered GE for some period of time and interviewed a lot of the executives who are long gone and were critical to understanding the business before I stepped into that scary giant operation.
Yeah, and so I'm wondering what you found appealing going from, you know, the journalist type that has to hold large corporations and governments accountable to going inside the beast and telling its story from within. What did you find appealing about that?
Well, one was my wife and I liked Cincinnati, and we had a young son. So I said, well, the next step is to go to a larger newspaper in another city, because I'd kind of outgrown Cincinnati as a reporter. And we didn't want to move. And I'd covered GE, and I also was attracted to the fact they had a Paris Air Show and an air show in London every year. So we had a chance to actually do some traveling. But frankly, the place scared me at first. It was when I was starting at GE in the 1980s in Cincinnati, it was during the Reagan buildup. And, you know, you had almost 20,000 people at Evendale. It was a really unwieldy, intimidating place. So like many, I walked in those gates a little uptight, but I did it and was glad we stayed with it. Then I watched the crash of the early 90s when the aviation industry went through a nightmare situation, and we lost half our employees. And happily today, they're all back. So GE Aviation has almost 50,000 people around the world today.
Wow. You know, when I think of GE in this region, I have to say I think it's mostly related to the fact that it's so frequently used as a locator in traffic reports. You know, they're
you're
like,
exactly
oh,
right.
You're backed up to GE today. So outside of its production work and those traffic reports, what do you think the public should know about GE and Evendale that maybe we don't know?
That's a great question, because I think each time you go up and down the highway, and I know I'm biased, but when you look at those old yellow buildings, you're looking at buildings that actually influence the outcome of the world. They influence the outcome of World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, Desert Storm. There were inventions in those buildings off the highway. There was one called the High Bypass Turbofan, and everybody's going to scratch their heads right now, that influenced the way we fly today. We were the ones that developed the first successful two-engine airplanes that go over the Pacific Ocean, those kind of things. So the way we fly today has been definitely influenced by things that occurred at the Evendale facility over the years. And this town is full of men and women who were involved in super classified programs they spent their whole career on that later influenced. So I'll give you one example. There's a man named Glenn Varney. He lives in Finneytown. Very quiet, elderly man who began working on stealth technology in the 1960s, helped Lockheed develop an airplane called the Stealth Fighter. He worked on it almost 20 years before the general public even knew it existed. And of course, as we all know from the first Gulf War, it was the stealth fighters that came in and knocked out all the communications in Baghdad because they simply couldn't detect the airplane with the best Soviet defense systems around. That was all developed in Cincinnati in cooperation with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So in some nondescript building off the highway during the 1960s and 70s, these technologies were being developed that would change the world. And that is, and that's what's so amazing about the story of GE Aviation.
Yeah, it is such a landmark, but we don't necessarily know exactly what goes on in those old walls. So you map out the years of this company to help us with that. You go year by year through its history. Some of these years had bigger impacts on the industry and the local area maybe than others.
They did.
But I wonder if there was a particular year that stuck out to you or maybe even surprised you, or a series of consecutive years that were very significant and may have been overlooked in the public consciousness.
Well, I think people forget the 1960s, that the United States had a supersonic transport program. At the same time the Concorde was being developed in Europe, there was a much more ambitious program in the U.S. with Boeing to develop a supersonic transport to fly people at supersonic speeds. GE had won that contract, built the largest jet engine ever known to man, and it still sits gathering dust in the basement of Building 700. Because in 1971, the program was canceled and thousands of people lost their jobs. We were involved in things in our history that we've now long forgotten, that were huge programs in the city like that. I think the most important program for Cincinnati long term was in the mid-1960s. We developed an engine in town called the TF-39. It's for the big C-5 Galaxy, the big giant green transport the Army has. And GE developed an engine for that program that was unique to the world and allowed the company to get into commercial aviation in the late 1960s and 70s when our arch enemy, Pratt & Whitney in Connecticut, had dominated the jetliner world. And we built off this engine a franchise that now today GE has the lion's share of the jetliner business. So General Electric was very clever about taking military designs and then modifying them and adapting them for the commercial world. And that happened over and over again. If you want to think of the Evendale plant as you drive by, think of the early 40s. It was a Wright Aeronautical factory that built piston engines for B-17s and B-29s. And then you get the 1950s. It was the site of all the hot rod engines that Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin flew as Air Force pilots, such as the F-104 and the F-4. Those were the J-79 engines. Then you get in the 60s and 70s, GE starts making a little toehold in the commercial engine world. We form a joint venture with the French in the 1970s. Thank you, Neil Armstrong, for that. I can tell you about that one. He helped us in getting that program off the ground. And suddenly GE emerges as a major player with the large commercial jetliners. And that's where the company is today, where every 2 seconds a plane takes off in the world powered by GE.
Wow. Well, let's go back to 1919. Sounds like a very good year to start.
Sure.
So take us back to 1919, GE Aviation and the skies in Dayton.
This is what happened is you had aviation becomes a factor in World War One. Not really the dogfights. We all know about Red Baron and all that. But the big thing was for doing observation or spying, frankly, at high altitude. But with a piston engine, what happens with a piston engine, it needs oxygen. And the higher you go in altitude, you get above 15,000 feet, a piston engine starts to lose power. And so that was like a ceiling that these biplanes had. And so the Europeans came up with a concept called the turbo supercharger, where you capture the exhaust gas, you compress it so it makes it oxygen rich, and then you put it back into the engine. You direct it back in. And when the United States joined the war effort in 1917, that was something the U.S. wanted to work on, is how do you do a supercharger to make an engine operate like it's at sea level when it's really high in the sky? And so they took some of those initial thoughts from the Europeans, but they weren't working well at test in Dayton, Ohio, which was the center of aviation in this country. World War I was the Wright Field, of course, named after the Wright brothers. And next to it was one called McCook Field. And these were research centers for the United States. So they finally turned to General Electric in the Lynn, Massachusetts operation because GE was doing all these large steam turbines because at that point GE was building the electrical grid for America. In order for electricity to work, Thomas Edison's light bulb, you needed steam turbine power. So GE knew all about compression, you know, impellers, turbine wheels, high temperature metals. It was just perfect for GE. And so our GE Aviation father is Sanford Moss, who was a scientist and engineer at the Lynn, Massachusetts plant. He's employed by the government to come up with a turbo supercharger for American aircraft. And it's finally perfected in 1919 at McCook Field in Dayton, Ohio. And what happened is when GE put the turbo supercharger on those airplanes, planes never flew the same again. They went to 16,000 feet, then they went to 20, they went to 22. And within 2 years, we were flying planes at over 40,000 feet. And I love the fact that we did it over the same airspace that Orville and Wilbur was flying in to perfect its original airplanes in 1905 and 1906.
Well, now you've given me goosebumps. Well done. I appreciate that. Very cool. And so then it was another war that led aviation a little closer to Cincinnati in the form of Wright Aeronautical
in
Laughlin, which would kind of be the precursor to GE Aviation landing there. So in 1940, Wright Aeronautical in Laughlin has a massive operation there via the U.S. Defense Department. And it looks like after World War II ended, massive layoffs there.
Oh, it was crazy. We had over 30,000 people working at the facilities right now that you think about on the highway. The yellow buildings were the original Wright Aeronautical. They were a massive producer of piston engines. And we actually, the government built that factory in 1940. This is before U.S. enters World War II, but it was obvious the Allies were going to need help. So they built this massive operation for piston engines for B-17s initially, then B-29s. And so this was a huge economy builder for this area. Interesting enough, the government picked that area just north of Cincinnati because they were impressed with all the machine tool operations throughout Cincinnati. We were the machine tool capital of the world. And so this was a highly industrialized city with great trade schools. And all these German kids graduated and knew how to put things together. And, you know, it really was. You had across the street, African-American community of Lincoln Heights was very involved in the Wright Aeronautical operation as well. We just had very mechanically inclined people in Cincinnati, and they built this operation. You had over 30,000 people working there. The war ends in 1945. At that point, there were about 24,000 there, and within 2 weeks, they were all sent home. Rosie Ribbiter had to go back home. So it all changed radically. The buildings were mostly empty until 1948. GE Aviation was, meanwhile, growing in Lynn, Massachusetts. They developed an engine called the J-47, which was a great fighter engine, and they wanted additional production space. And so Wright-Patt said, maybe you ought to move to the what was then called the Laughlin plant in 1948. And we said, we'll have up to 2,000 people working there someday. Well, the Korean War hits, and it was 8,000 before you know it.
Yeah, they started to arrive. I read in your book they were very quietly arriving at Union Terminal from Massachusetts.
Right. That's exactly right. They came from Massachusetts and opened the buildings in the dark, and then next thing you know, you have the invasion of North Korea and the South Korea, and the number one fighter airplane for the U.S. was the F-86 Sabre, great interceptor, powered exclusively by a GE engine developed in Lynn, Massachusetts, but mostly built in Cincinnati, Ohio. And that's what really put us into the aviation world, and GE would be there ever since.
And in 1952, the Laughlin plant becomes known as the Evendale plant because
right.
Evendale becomes a village that year. And mm-hmm. this may be a piece of history locally that people don't know, but GE seemed to be very involved in crafting the village of Evendale's charter.
That's right. One of the original seven managers of GE from the Lynn plant arrives in 1948, and he helps them as a resident of the area put together their charter. And so the property of GE Aviation in Cincinnati at the big plant off the highway, part of it's in Laughlin and part of it's in Evendale. So we pay taxes to both areas.
Very generous of you. And then there's another part of our listening area, and certainly the greater Cincinnati metro area, that became part of GE Aviation history, Adams County, Peebles.
Yes.
This was in the mid-1950s. Tell us what was going on in
that
area.
Oh, what a wonderful story. I mean, if people are familiar, you know, when the coolest jet testing site in the world, bar none, is in Peebles, Ohio. We have almost 10,000 acres where we have both indoor and outdoor sites running all of our engines, and every commercial engine has to be tested there before it's delivered to either Boeing or the military or even Airbus in Europe. So we do all of our development testing out there on brand new concepts, secret engines, you name it. It's all done in Peebles. But that begins in the 1950s. GE very quietly begins to buy this land out in Adams County because we finally divulge the fact that we have to do secret military testing both for jet engines and also rockets. And so we actually put together this test operation using existing farm buildings. They had security on horseback that was right around the facility. We hired local farmers in the area to basically say, if you keep the wood, you can remove a lot of this excess, you know, structures on the property and things like that. And so we began testing there in the 50s. Then it kind of gets mothballed in the early 60s. And then by the late 1960s, as we return back to the commercial engine business with a vengeance, it begins to grow. Now we have hundreds of people who work at, I think 300 people now work at the Peebles site. It's one of our most productive sites. We're now doing final assembly of some of the engines out there. So it is really one of the true marvels in aviation, in the middle of nowhere.
Tell us what's going on at the GE plant in Evendale right now.
Right now, they're trying to figure out if Boeing wants to build what they call a middle-of-the-market airplane, which would be a replacement for the Boeing 757. Do we build an engine or not? So that's what they're thinking about. The other thing is, how on earth are we going to deliver all these engines on time? The backlog for GE engines right now is around 20,000 backlog. I mean, the commercial engines are sold out for several years already. And so we are straining the supply chain. We've opened 8 new factories in the last decade across the United States to also support Evendale, which we're in Evendale, we do assembly, but we also do a ton of testing. And they've built all these new test cells there for engines that both you develop, and if they develop issues out in the field, you bring them in and you run them in the plant. So we learn how to produce an engine for the first time in Evendale. So there's a lot of things around new product that always touches the Evendale operation. So what they're trying to do right now is figure out how on earth are we going to meet the demand for all the Airbus A320neo engines, 737 MAX engines. The demand right now is extremely high, and so the entire supply base is definitely being strained. There's also a significant amount of classified military engine programs underway in Cincinnati right now, some very exciting programs that your grandkids will be talking about.
Yeah, spill it. What is it?
I know.
All right. Well, the name of the book is 100 Years of Reimagining Flight. It's written by Rick Kennedy, who spent 30 years at GE Aviation as their media guy. And he's done a nice job of detailing 100 years that they are celebrating here in 2019 of GE Aviation. Rick, thanks so much for talking to us.
Hey, today. Michael, it's a great pleasure to be on your show.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.